Assalamu alaikum rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Welcome to Radio Islam International. My name is Anisa Isak and it's the early Sunday morning show. The show that actually I don't think it has a name, but we've been calling it the early Sunday morning show, alhamdulillah, because that's exactly what it is. And our first slot for this morning would be with our, I'm going to call our in-house or resident horticulturalist from DUT, and that's no other than Astrid Badenhorst. Astrid, good morning.
Anisha, how are you this morning?
I'm really, really good. The weather's really good. After seeing the weather on TV yesterday, I was thinking that we're going to wake up to a rather cold and chilly day here in Durban, but instead it's still one of those warm days with a slight breeze, and coming from the coastal area, I have to say that it was a beautiful morning today. You know, the start of the morning was really, really wonderful. So I'm in top form, and I hope that you are as good as I am, or better.
Yes, indeed. It is a beautiful morning, and so was yesterday. We actually went to welcome the whales at Amnesty Beach yesterday. That was wonderful to have a welcoming the whale festival every year.
Yes. Yes, at Anstey's, so that's right. Did you get to see any? Did you get to see any sardines? Are they here yet?
No, the sardines are not here yet. We're waiting in anticipation for their arrival.
Yeah, I know. I check out every morning. You know, we wake up for the morning prayer, so we watch all of the fishermen waiting on the beach to see, you know, watching the horizon to see if they can see those silvery shoals making their way down the coast so they could get a hold of them, because I'm sure that everybody in Durban, especially our holiday makers, are waiting for the arrival of the sardines.
Yes, definitely.
Well, we're talking more about what's happening on the ground, and we're talking about permaculture, which we've done for the last 2 weeks, but this is quite a huge subject, as you said to us. And for those who haven't heard the last two programs or want to know exactly what permaculture is, I'm going to try and break it down for you, but I'll leave that to Astrid to correct me should I get it wrong. Basically, it's a set of design principles that work around using the patterns and features of the natural system to sustain it. So it makes it self-sufficient. So the gardener doesn't have to spend much time worrying about whether they should, you know, what they need to do in the garden, because once you've used those principles, you're letting nature take its course. Am I right?
Correct. Definitely correct. So you mimic the patterns of nature to manage your garden, basically, especially fruit production, because that is vegetable production, kitchen gardens. That is what permaculture is all about. However, you can apply these principles to everyday gardening. So you don't only need to do vegetables. You can apply to everyday gardening.
All right. Is permaculture used within the farming community?
Definitely. Especially small-scale farmers, not so much the commercial production, but especially small-scale farmers, rural communities, and also, as I mentioned before, a lot of schools practice permaculture gardening as well.
All right, so we looked last week at design. Is there more for us to speak about with regards to that part of the permaculture, or are we moving on to maybe looking at other parts that we need to focus on?
We are now really getting into the actual design of the permaculture. Last week we looked at basically analyzing your site, looking at where are your sunny areas, your shady areas, and where are your water sources in relation to where you want to plant and things like that. So when we look at the actual design, you look at your, let's call it your permaculture zones, where you would plant your different types of plants. So permaculture zones are different growing zones in your permaculture design, and these zones you basically look at where you're going to plant what, and what are you going to put in those different areas? And the permaculture garden is divided into growing zones according to the frequency where you visit the different areas. For instance, if you have a park where you park your car and you walk up to your door, that would be one zone. That will be a zone where you frequently walk past your garden area. The same, your back door. You walk out of your back door, maybe into a patio area or into your grass area. That will also be a zone. So you divide these areas. So what you do in permaculture, your planting zones, you design are numbered from the inside out. For instance, zone zero will be your house, okay? And from there we count outwards, and that gives the initial impression that permaculture zones are concentric circles around your house.
Okay.
But it's not actually the case. You can you can divide your zones according to how you use your garden, and you start basically at your house. So that will be zone zero. Zone one, that will be the areas which you most visit. So that will be the areas closest to your house. As I said before, maybe the path you walk from your car up to your house, your back door area where you could just go out your back door or your front door. Okay? So those are the areas closest to your house. Now in those areas, you plant things that you are using, that's now in the vegetable garden sense. You plant things that you are using very frequently. Also, those will be your softer herbs and your salad garden, for instance.
Okay.
Things like, and also plants that require more water than others.
Mm-hmm.
So those will be your herbs. I would say things like
your lettuce.
Yeah, definitely your lettuce, but that needs a lot of water. So your lettuce, your spinach, your leafy vegetables, scented herbs to give you that nice fragrance close to your house. If you have space, you can even put something like a lemon tree in your zone one. I mean, lemons, yeah, I know I use lemons quite often.
Uh-huh.
Not often people have the space for a fruit tree, but if you do have the space, you can do that. So those will be all your small herbs and
herbs. Mm-hmm.
Seedlings that need a lot of attention. So, and also the old principle of gardening is to put your vegetables in a sunny corner way away from your house, and you have to make constant trips walking up and down.
Yes.
To actually go and harvest those vegetables. If you have these leafy vegetables that need a lot of attention closer to your zone zero, which is your house, you don't spend that much time and energy walking bigger distance. And also when you need to harvest something quickly while you are cooking. If, for instance, in winter now you make a pot of soup and you need some parsley and it's raining outside, but your vegetable garden is way at the back of your garden, most likely you will make your soup without the parsley.
True.
So if it's closer to your home and it's things that you use on a regular basis, you can just pop out your door, pick what you need, and come inside without much hassle. So The other thing that people do is that with vegetables, plant it in straight rows and have your distinct vegetable garden. But with permaculture, because we mimic nature, you interplant things, and vegetables on its own can be quite pretty. Look at all the different types of lettuces you get. You get your frilly lettuce, you get the big leaf buttered lettuce, you get the crisp
iceberg.
And then you get all these different colors. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yes.
That browny colored frilly lettuce, that is really, really pretty.
Yes. And there's one with a purpley hue to it. The ends of the leaves have these like little purple ends to it. I think that's rocket, if I'm not. No, it's not rocket, but
it's a type of lettuce as well. So there are quite a few different varieties. So you can interplant these lettuces with things like mustard leaves. You know, the mustards are also quite nice. They have big striking leaves. And then you get your pak choi and your, tat choi as well. Mm-hmm. And you can interplant that with things like nasturtiums. Nasturtiums gives you these nice bright yellow and
flowers.
And the leaves are also quite peppery. So you can even use that, and with that you can do, I'm thinking to force, not celery, spinach.
Okay.
Spinach also in between, and you do get this nice spinach with all the different colored stems. Nurseries normally sell that as well.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And the stem colors are, some are yellow, some are orangey. The leaves, of course, are still bright green, so that gives a nice contrast.
Yes.
And you interplant all of this, and you can interplant it with edible seedlings. This time of the year, you can interplant it with violas and pansies, which the flowers are edible as well. And don't forget, my absolute favorite are your little marigolds.
Marigolds, yes.
Yes, yes. I simply love that little plant. It's so, so pretty.
Little blobs of sunshine.
Definitely. And it is so beneficial with the properties that it basically chase away your insect pest.
Yes.
So, and all of this, if you have an established garden, all of this you can actually plant on the edges of your shrub border. So you don't just need to have a pure vegetable garden. You can actually plant it on the borders of your shrubs instead of just masses of one type of annual. Because I know what gardeners do is that on the edges of the beds, four color, they would do monoculture and plant just, say, one row of petunias, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
But, yes?
You mentioned marigolds, and I found out something very interesting about marigolds. You do know that in Indian cooking, saffron is used in a lot of things, including biryani. And if you don't have it, or if you find that saffron is too expensive, because it is, then you can actually substitute it with marigold flowers, the petals, because they are edible. So a little household tip for anybody out there who's interested and who likes to be adventurous in their cooking. Marigold can be substituted for saffron in your food. So just putting it out there.
Wow, that's wonderful. So now I've learned something today myself.
Yeah, it comes from some of the useless information I keep in my head.
Yes, coming back to that, I keep on mentioning that little pathway that you walk from your car to your front door.
Uh-huh.
Instead of having just one, say, monoculture or color, just petunias or one lot of annuals, just imagine you have your shrubs and on the border you interplant all these different type of lettuce with marigolds, nasturtium, and other small herbs, and intermix them all together. That would be such a pretty edible little pot that plays a function, not just ornamental, but it has a multiple function, basically. So, okay. So that is a permaculture zone one, for instance. And then also with that, your taps and outside taps and water sources are closer to that area, so it will be easier to actually apply irrigation and water to those areas. Grey water can also be basically let in that area. So instead of your bath water that goes down the drain and goes to waste, your bath water through just a couple of pipes and connections can be actually, when it drains out, drain into your Zone 1 permaculture garden. And that is then you reuse your water, your bath water in that way. And it won't go to waste. It will go towards watering your Zone 1 permaculture garden.
Especially seeing as we have a water shortage situation in South Africa at most times.
Yes, definitely. South Africa is actually classed as a water scarce country. And some people would think, especially here in Durban, when you get all the summer rain, you would think, but how can South Africa be water scarce? But there are lots of areas in South Africa that don't have a lot of rainfall.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
All that grey water, your kitchen sink water, your bath water, can actually be reused.
What about your washing machine? You know, like on the rinse cycle, if it's possible to maybe get the water from there, or would that be too harsh for your garden, seeing that it contains a lot of soap with chemicals?
Yes, you can use your washing machine water as well. For that area.
Okay. All right, yeah.
Yes, and then we go on to your Zone 2 in your permaculture design. And those Zone 2 is the area a little bit further away from your house. And that is the area that usually require full irrigation and also mulching. And if you have space, those areas can also be the areas where you have fruit trees. Okay? If you don't have space, because now we're thinking of big and small gardens, if you don't have space, those areas are the areas where you can use trellises and also your bigger shrubs and things.
Okay.
Your bigger shrubs. Things like your lavenders, your rosemaries, and those sort of shrubby types of plants. Yeah, in Durban, that will be the area where you plant your curry leaves, for instance. Also, you put your plants that you can use as windbreaks. Also, ideal areas to put your ponds and hedges. So those will be your plants that is slightly bigger, and also your hardy perennials and herbs and other spices that you don't use on a regular basis. Like your ginger, I mentioned rosemary, lavender, and those sort of trees. And also herbs that tend to re-sow themselves. Herbs like dill, coriander, borage, those will all be plants that grows a little bit higher and it's more suited for your zone 2, basically. Other things like your tomatoes, potatoes, and sweet corn, cauliflower, those are normally what you put in zone 2 as well. Zone 2 also, if you have walls or areas where you can put trellises up, you can actually use that to plant your beans and cucumber and all those rambly sort of plants. You can use in that area.
All right, I have a question. You were speaking about trellises. Now, trellises are those, those things that allow for your plants to actually creep up. So even if you're putting a piece of fencing with the, pieces of wood holding it up, that's what we'd refer to as a trellis.
Yes.
So you could grow just about anything that would creep up on a trellis, so like a granadilla, a plant.
Yes.
I'm just thinking like grapes, that kind of thing. In that area.
In that area, yes. And remember, permaculture mimics nature, so you don't need mm-hmm. to buy all these expensive wooden trellises and things. If you want a more sort of design element, yes, you can use that, but as you mentioned, chicken wire can go up against the wall, or you can put three sticks together. Say if you've now have pruned a tree and stuff, and they are long pieces of branches, you can clear it from side branches and basically tie it like a teepee, the three sticks together, and uh-huh. Let your rambling vegetables like your beans climb up there. Those are the sort of trellises you use in permaculture garden, and it looks quite pretty as well.
Uh-huh, yeah. All right, we can go on.
Okay, so you look at all of that, and what I wanted to say is that with your permaculture, you don't have defined borders for your zone 1 and zone 2. So it's the basic principle is your zone 1 areas where you frequently use. The zone 2 can be, it's not far off, but it starts immediately after your zone 1. And basically also you look at your height. Those plants I've mentioned for zone 2 are all plants that grow much higher than the plants that will grow in zone 1. So mm-hmm. it is like a continuous planting immediately. It doesn't mean that you need now to say this is the borders of zone 1, only this is going to be planted in there, and then there's going to be a space and then zone 2. It doesn't work like that. It's all sort of a interplanting. If you look at your natural areas, your natural areas, you'll find that your plants are all mixed in together, and it's natural selection. The taller ones will almost be in the middle and at the back, and on the edges you will find your smaller plants. If you look at a forest setting, you will have your big trees, and then you will have your understorage plants where you have your ramblers and creepers and little plants on the bottom. And even in the trees itself, you get your vines creeping up. So everything has its own space, and nature creates its own space for each and every little plant.
Now, as you're mentioning all of this, in my mind, I'm trying to picture a garden that would work on the principles that you've just mentioned to us. And what I'm thinking is, like, if I'm looking at a herb garden, I could put a tomato plant amongst my herbs, maybe somewhere around the middle, and that would allow some of the herbs that creep to climb up the plant as well, because there's always that symbiotic relationship between plants. And then on the outside of that, you could maybe have the smaller ones, like your parsley and oregano and that kind of thing. Just out of the top of my head, I'm thinking here. And then you have other, maybe like you said, you know, your marigolds on the edges.
Would that work? Definitely. That will work. What also will work, if you think of onions and carrots, yes, they both are crops that grows underneath, but onions, for instance, if you look at how it grows, the leaves go straight up, it doesn't spread. Mm-hmm. Okay? And also the onion bulb is shallow, so when it does use water and nutrients from the soil, it only harvests that water and nutrients from the soil in the top layers. While carrots go straight down and they go deeper down.
Deeper.
So they harvest nutrients and water from deeper down in the soil. The leaves are more spreading. Okay? So you can actually interplant onions and carrots. And it goes quite well together. The onion leaves go straight up, doesn't take much space. And the carrots go straight down, the leaves spread a bit. That will mulch the soil as well. So that's quite a good combination to plant.
To have together,
To plant together. Another one is what we would call the three sisters in planting. That is your sweet corn. And rambling things like your beans, so it's your sweet corn, beans, and
it's Sunday morning, I understand.
Yeah, I haven't had a cup of coffee yet. Those will be your sweet corn, beans, and then you can plant your other little things like even tomatoes you can plant with that. Now the sweet corn will give you the height, and the beans will ramble on the sweet corn, and that will give you the support of what your beans basically need, also like the natural trellis. And then your squash, you can also plant squash with that that design basically. And so it's sweet corn, beans, cucumber, squash, zucchini, and then you can keep interplant with, as I said, tomatoes with that as well. So your sweet corn will give your trellis, your just zucchini or squash, that will give you the cover the ground, so that will be a natural form of mulch. The beans, the sweet corn will then be the support, the trellis of the beans basically.
All right, let's take a short break so you can have your coffee and we can pay our bills, and when we come back we'll carry on speaking more about the different zones.
Thank you.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back. My name is Anisa Isak, and my guest for this morning with the gardening show is Astrid Badenwurst. She's a horticulturalist from the Durban University of Technology, and we are speaking about permaculture. We're looking at how a garden should be zoned. So basically what we're looking at is how you should be planting and what you can be planting in your garden, so that you're using up the resources as much as possible and keeping it within the natural way that it should actually grow, and gives you minimal work in the garden as well. So Astrid, we've looked at, I think we had zone 3.
Yes, I'm going to stop it at zone 3. The zone 4 and 5 are more for larger scale gardens, and I know a lot of our listeners have just smaller home gardens. So for zone 4 and 5, we look more at, say, your school permaculture gardens or community permaculture gardens where you have quite big areas to still do. But what I actually want to talk about before we end our podcast today is how to get started, because now you have all these zones and everything, mm-hmm. and now you're ready to basically plant and to
yes.
get your garden going. Now, I mentioned before that the old gardening practices were to put your vegetable garden in a sunny corner quite away from each other, from the house. But with permaculture, you bring that all closer with your various zones, and you start at your home, at your house as zone 1, and then work your way out for how you basically, let's call it, use your herbs and vegetables. The ones that you use more frequently, that is the closest to your home. But the biggest mistake that most gardeners do is when they start these projects, especially with vegetable gardens, is to try and take a big area, a huge plot, and they start to dig it up. You need, you spend a lot of money on seeds, on seedlings, on compost, and you're quite enthusiastic, but very often you don't have the time to finish off your project. It's quite laborious to dig and spend that amount of time and energy in your garden. So mm-hmm. my advice is to start small. Yes? You start basically with zone 1, but you start small. You don't need to do your whole permaculture design in one go, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you do plan the whole garden, all your areas, but you take it one small step at a time. When you try and do too much at a time, normally, as I said, you can run out of time, you can run out of resources, and after you have dug over this whole big area, weeds basically start growing
yes.
In that area. Also, even if you do start your garden, it's a natural process, so weeds will start in amongst your vegetable garden as well, and you will need to take it out. And if it's a big area, you need to spend a lot of time and energy to do that. So, as I said again, start small. So you start with, say, your zone 1, and you do your small area with your frilly lettuce and those sort of herbs and plants. And once that is sort of growing and established and you see that that is working, then you can move on to your zone 2 area and then start planting that area until that is basically set up and you see that your systems are working. So, as I said, you start in zone 1. With mm-hmm. one garden bed, you select a few species that is easy to grow and that is suited to that condition, and also plants that you love eating and love interacting with. Yes? And that will motivate you. There's nothing like when you, say, make a salad and you pop out quickly out of your back door and right there you can pick your various types of lettuce and your mustard greens, and you go into your house, rinse it quickly, and there you have your salad. So that is the whole thing of permaculture as well, is to bring the enjoyment, the love of gardening back in it as well. Because with permaculture, it's not only the what you plant and then your garden, is also how you experience your garden, how you enjoy what you do within your garden.
So it's literally the fruits of your labor.
Definitely. So that is what you do. And then once you have that interaction with your zone one, you can go on and then expand your garden and do little bits of gardening and adding up to the whole look until you have your entire permaculture garden set up. And a modern twist to it is, as I said before, you don't have just your old thatch vegetable patch right at the back. You actually interplant your vegetables and your herbs and with your rest of your garden, with the ornamental garden. So you make your ornamental garden more functional as well. Instead of just having the ornamental plants, you intermix it all with functional plants. And how the whole approach is to look at that your garden has different functions. So it's just not one function. You have your roses there and you only enjoy the beauty. But interplant your roses with marigolds. Again, my favorite little plant.
Yes.
The marigolds will keep the aphids away. And as you said, you can use your marigold petals in cooking to give that nice color. Yes, I'm thinking now of using turmeric to color, to give you yellow rice, but you can actually use that marigold leaf petals to give you that color.
So the yellowness, yes.
The yellowness, yes. So it's all different functions. If you have a compost heap, for instance, put some chicken wire around it on the sunny side. Plant some tomatoes next to that chicken wire. The chicken wire will act as a trellis for the tomatoes. The nutrients from the compost heap will seep into the soil, where the tomatoes will take up that nutrient. The tomatoes will hide the ugly compost heap. It will produce lovely tomatoes for you. And once the tomato life cycle is over, you can just pick up the plant and put it on the compost heap. So you as the gardener save a lot of energy. The tomatoes hide the ugly compost heap. So it's multiple functions. The instance. So that is what we aim at with the design of a permaculture garden or area, is to see the multiple, or to utilize the multiple functions of your different components and elements that you basically put together.
All right. Well, we've come to the end of the show for today, and we'll look at the rest of, are we still looking at permaculture next week as well?
Yes, we can look at permacultures, or if anybody wants to basically suggest the topic, that is also welcome. As you mentioned at the opening, permaculture is such a huge subject that I can go on and talk about it forever.
Yes. Well, Astrid, we don't have time to talk more about permaculture, as interesting as it is. Mm-hmm. But we will chat with you next week again, and hopefully we'll be speaking on either permaculture or something else that is relevant to the garden. But you have yourself a good rest of this weekend. Enjoy it, and we'll speak to you again next week.
Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that's our gardening show for this morning, speaking on permaculture, and we've looked at how you can zone your garden for the best effect and the use of your plants within those zones. So if you are wanting to hear more about those, or if you've missed some of it and you are interested in permaculture, you're welcome to log on to the website and you will find the podcast there. We'll take a break now and we'll come back after the news with our tech slot.